Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinniston and this is episode 41. As I record this introduction on the 18th of May on Saturday afternoon, it's now just on 10 past 3. So the Kettering Trail is well underway. It'll be about 8 hours in now, so presumably the leaders will be finishing soon. Everybody else will be working their way around the course. For lots of people, it will be their final big run before the West Highland Way Race. For others, it's just a one-off ultra marathon. The West Highland Way Race now is 5 weeks today, so definitely the countdown is started and it's getting closer by the day, by the week. And this time in 5 weeks, the race will be 14 hours old. So some of the leaders will be probably approaching Kinlochleven, somewhere around Kinlochleven. Where will I be after 14 hours? I'm not sure, probably still making my way towards Bridge of Orkney or somewhere like that. But for lots of us who are doing the race, definitely our thoughts are very much centred on the race now. For a number of people, the Kettering might be their last big run. For a number of people, next weekend, I see on Facebook that there's quite a few people planning two-day runs over the next weekend. That's certainly something I'm doing next Sunday, Monday, with the taking advantage of the bank holiday Monday. And so I'll be doing my final runs, Balmahar to Bridge of Orkney on the Sunday, 42 miles, and then Bridge of Orkney to Fort William, 35 miles on the Monday. And that'll be my last big run, last back-to-back run. And then from then on, I'll probably have an easy week, and then a medium week, and then two easy weeks leading up to the race. So it definitely feels as though it's getting close to the start line now. So I hope if you're running the race for the first time or for the umpteenth time that your training is going well, you feel happy with the way things are going, and certainly look forward to seeing as many as you as possible on the 21st of June, on that Friday night, getting ready for the 1 o'clock start on the 22nd. Anyway, back to this podcast. Last night, Marco came round to our house and we had a great evening just chatting and interviewing Marco. And I hope you really enjoy his interview. Marco's someone who, you probably won't like me saying this, but is definitely one of the favorites for the race this year. He's had a great year, an excellent 100K in Perth, and then a really good fling, both really good solid PBs for him, running really well. And so it was interesting to chat to Marco and get a feel of his thoughts. He's run the race three times and had some real battles and got through those, but I think most people who know him know that there's a better time in there and it could well be this year. So I hope you enjoy that interview. It went on for almost an hour and a half, so there's not much time for anything else. So basically, this podcast is just the interview that I did with Marco last night. So I hope you enjoy it, and I certainly enjoyed chatting to Marco and learned a lot from his approach and the things that he's learned over the last few years. So enjoy. Well, it's great to have Marco with us for this latest podcast interview. Thanks for coming, Marco.
No problem. I knew you would get me one day for this. I've been hiding.
Well, you have featured on one podcast when you and Thomas did one between you when you were running, but I thought there's no way that I was going to run with you and do this interview. So we're sitting very comfortably in my house. He's had some nice homemade banana cake and a cup of coffee, so he's quite happy.
I do one every week now.
That's right. And I remember the first time we met was December 07, Marco. I'd done the West Highland Way for the first time in that June, and then you'd entered the race the following year. And I remember we met at Mulgai car park. There was a number of us getting ready to run to Drimmen and back. We were all about to go, and then you and Debs turned up just as we were leaving. So later, and then I think that's been the pattern throughout our friendship, really.
You know, I did beat you for the first time at Carlings. But I knew there was food involved.
That's right, So you got somewhere before we did.
Yeah, because I knew that the food was going to be lovely, and I just thought, no way am I letting John get into that food first.
Yeah, and even tonight, did you turn up on time?
It was 10. Well, it depends if the first time we raged or the second time we raged.
Anyway, it's great to have you with us, Marco.
It's good to be
here. And I've been looking forward to this. I've got some good questions that people have posted on Facebook.
So
maybe first of all, you could just introduce yourself a little bit for those who don't know you, and maybe talk about how you got into running generally and why you got into ultra running in particular.
Okay. Well, my name's Marco Consani. Done the West Samway three times. And I got into running because I'm competitive, really. My little brother was doing a half marathon, and he was like, I'm doing a half marathon, and he'd done 3 or 4 months training, and before he'd actually told me, or 2 months training maybe. And I thought, well, there's no way I'm letting him do that, and I'm not doing that, I'm going to do that. And so I went out and bought the most expensive pair of running shoes I could afford, and they were Asics Nimbus. And I went out and I ran, and we trained together for the half marathon, and that was how I got into running. And then,
so what year was that?
2003 or 2004, I think.
Okay, so about 10 years ago.
Yeah, about 10 years. Okay. I've been running. So we finished that half marathon, and that was it. We stopped. We didn't do any more. And about 6 months later, the idea of doing the half marathon came up again. There's a Glasgow one, so a lot of people do that one. And so we started training for it. I think actually we did a 10K as well. My wee brother was injured, so me and my friend did a 10K. So, but then that was it, we were finished. And so the second year we decided to do another half marathon, which was Glasgow again, to try and beat our times. And we decided, let's do something a little different. We need to do speed training. So the three of us tried to do speed training, and I was absolutely useless at it. I was so slow. And so we decided to join a club, and I was so nervous joining a club. But that was how, you know, I started at the bottom group, and every week you would try and push to the next one. And just my competitiveness, I just tried to keep on getting better and better. And I just did 10Ks and half marathons. Until probably...
And that was Garscoe, was it?
That was Garscoe Harris, so I joined. Until probably 2006, I think the most I'd ever ran was about 13 miles. And then I went a run with... I'd met Debbie then, and I'd went a run with Debbie, and I think I did 15 miles, and that was the most I'd ever done. And then a week later, I had... there was a guy who was doing the London Marathon training, and he used to join us for 9 miles of our long runs at that time were 9 miles. And he used to join us for those 9 miles, and then he would go off and do another 10 miles or something. And this one day I decided, I wonder how far I can go with them. And at the end of this 20 mile run, I actually was like, actually I could keep going, this is okay. So then I decided to do a marathon, and so trained for Loch Ness, which was my first marathon. Did that and got a pretty good time. I was quite happy with it. And then we did Paris Marathon. Me and Debbie did Paris Marathon, and that didn't go so well. I got cramp and stuff. And then I think I kind of scunnered myself with the marathon. It wasn't. At the time, it was enjoyable. It was good, but it didn't. Everyone had said, oh, it'll be so emotional when you go over the line. And don't get me wrong, I think the first one it was a little bit emotional because I was so glad to finish. But there was something still missing, I think. And then Deb had suggested the Devil at the Highlands. And so we did the Devil at the Highlands, and I shot off at my marathon pace, I think, and was leading for the first 18 miles or something. And then John Kennedy overtook me, I think, around about Glencoe. I was broken. It took me about 5 or 6 miles to get going again. But I think I came in fourth or something. I always come in fourth in the Devils. It's always a wooden spoon for me in that race. And so that was the first time doing, and it was a beautiful day. It was lovely. And then that's when I knew Ian Beattie from work. I'd worked with Ian Beattie for years, and we'd always thought of him as the mental guy that ran the West Samway. And it was funny enough, I actually met him for the, we'd long since stopped working together, and I met him at half marathon in Fort William, and we'd kept in touch since then. And I'd asked him, can you get me onto the West Samway? And that was, you know, we went from the Devils to the West Samway. Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. And we'll find out a bit more about your experiences on the West Highland Way. But before we do that, I wanted just to ask you about last weekend, because you were supporting Debs and Sharon and the GB team in the 24-hour IAU 24-hour race, and lots of us were following the progress on the internet and refreshing every hour or so and seeing how you're getting on. So can you just tell us a little bit about that race and what it was like supporting, and how did the girls get on?
Well, first of all, the both of them did absolutely fantastic. I was so proud. They were the problems they've had in 24-hour races before, which normally, you know, the last 3-4 hours slowing down, they didn't. Well, they slowed down, obviously they're going to slow down, but they kept running beforehand. It's been a case of, you know, a bomb wouldn't move them, they would just walk the last 2 hours. This time they ran throughout, so their main training through since the last 24 hours definitely been trying to improve their food, trying to improve how long they can run for, and they did that. And both of them, pardon me, got PBs. Both of them broke the Scottish record as well. Sharon was a little bit ahead, and they both really were the stars, I think, of, you know, the GB team, and it was
in good. The five women, they counted for a second.
Yes,
they?
That's right. Yes, and so that was a European second place, and I think it was fourth world, yeah. So, you know, they've definitely shown, you know, they're. I'm trying to follow Debbie and do the same things as her. She's getting away in the distance now, you know. They're very dedicated and really good. But I don't know if anyone's supported a 24-hour race before. It is a fantastic race to support. It's different from all the other races. You know, you see your runner every, I think it was about, you know, 12 to 15 minutes. So you're seeing your runner. But you definitely have a say in how they do a lot more than other runs. Other runs you just hold out a bottle, but this one you actually, you have to get them slowed down, you need to get them speed up, you need to change them, you need, you know, there's a lot more support into it. You feel more of a team. It's more of like a Formula One pit stop when they come in and things. It's I enjoy doing them, but also the hardest thing to do. I was talking to Debbie at the end of it, and my legs feel like I've ran 30, 40 miles after it, just the standing and the, you're eating rubbish, and it's, you know, you're eating bits of their leftover food and things.
And you're getting no sleep then.
And no sleep, and your support doesn't just last the 24 hours. You get up earlier. Well, you get up at the same time as them, they're obviously nervous, but you're at the track before them, you're unloading gear, you're unloading things. They appear, they're sitting down, you know, they get an easy life, I think. You know, they then start running, you know, you get 12 hours where it's actually all right. Then they start to get, narky at you, and, you know, you've got a smile, you know. Sorry, I didn't just pack the right jelly babies this time, you know. And then they finish, and that's not the end, you know. They then carry all this stuff back, and it's such a drawn-out process as well. They don't just, it's not like the West Ham Way where you finish, and then it's, get a sleep and something to eat, and then it's the next day. You know, the presentation is a couple of hours afterwards. So you then have a couple of hours of trying to get your runner and yourself awake and going and functioning. They're seizing up, you know. You've then got issues with people not feeling too well. Sharon had she quite a lot of time feels quite dizzy and sick at the end, so you have to lie them down, put feet up. We had three runners like that this time in the GB team, you know, and then they've got to get up on stage, and yeah, it's funny watching everyone on stage, they're all shaking one side and the other, so. But they did fantastic. I can't, you know, there's not, the things they've learnt in the last year since their last one's just been phenomenal. And they did us all proud.
Yeah, no, and I think for the West Highland Way family, we're very proud of them as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was a tremendous performance.
I did try to keep it updated on Facebook, but sometimes it's hard because you've got one at one side of the track and one at the other.
Yeah.
So instead of maybe your 13 minutes, you get every 6 or 7 minutes they come through. And
it worked out great because the website was superb. You know, that was updating, so I was putting it on every 90 minutes or so.
I didn't see that. I didn't go into the West Ham Way site because I was just going into the one Facebook, and I did actually post, can someone give me the, because we were try to work things out, and we were kind of, it's difficult because the way the times come through, you can't actually get an accurate of where everyone is.
Yeah,
you probably saw that in the list where you maybe see someone came through at 19 hours 47 minutes, but someone came through the same point 10 minutes later, but in the sheet is down below them, or, or it's hard to, and you're trying to sit there with no sleep trying to work this out.
Yeah. Anyway, you did very well, and the and the girls did very well as well.
The whole team, even the guys as well, did better this time than anyone. Steve, his, another guy in the team, did fantastic, and the Robbie Britton as well. They all did brilliant, and it's great being part of that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well done. Okay, so let's think. Let's go back to the West Highland Way then. So let's think about your performances. You've run it four times. You finished three times. So your first race was 2008. So can you tell us a little bit about your preparation for that one? How did you feel your training went? What was your aim for the race, and how did it actually go?
I would say, actually, you know, looking back, I don't, at the time I probably thought the training wasn't, it was probably too fast. You know, we used to go on our training runs together, and me and Thomas would maybe hang about for 10 minutes and then run away.
That's right.
And then, you know, there was a couple of times, I think, so I'd done the Devil of the Highlands once, and I think my time was 7 hours there. And I think me and Thomas ran it, I don't even remember if that was that year, but some of our training runs, I think one year I ran it in a training run in 6:30, you know, half an hour quicker than the actual race pace. And then 2 weeks later, I did it in 6:27 or something ridiculous, you know. And you think to yourself, "What were you thinking? What were you thinking at that time?" But at the time, I think you think, "Oh, I can do this. I must be able to race brilliant." But a lot of that race, the first race, went okay till probably Glencoe. Glencoe, I struggled after that, and I think it was overtraining beforehand. When I look back, we just did too many miles. We would go out and do 50-mile runs and run them fast. And the thing I've learned over the last few years is there's not really, for me personally, everyone's different, but running much over 30, 35 miles in one day doesn't really give me any benefit anymore. I'd rather run two 20-milers back to back than 140-miler. On that first year, we'd do those training runs. So say we would do the Devil's route and we would do 40 miles. I'd then take 5 days off running completely, and then you would, so it was like a race. And then you would run on the Saturday and you'd be all stiff still, so you'd be another few days out. So it was really like a week before you ran. And nowadays I'm much more into consistency, and you're better off running every day but running less, but being consistent. So I think that's why when I got to maybe Glencoe in the first year, I was just knackered. And I remember you overtaking me. I know you want me to bring this up, don't you? You do every one of these training runs, and you know, I'm finishing at King's House and sitting with a pint of beer and chips and stuff, and then, you know, half an hour later or three quarters an hour later, you were coming in, John, and you know, you're like, wow, you know, you're thinking to yourself, wow, I'm much faster, you know, you know. And then people start to tell you that, they say, oh, you're gonna have a great race because they see you doing this every day. And so you start thinking that and learn, you know, listening to that. So you know, the first half of that race, I remember getting to, was it Rerdenen, and being in first place, you know, with no idea what I was doing. And because I think it just goes to your head, and it feels easy, you know, yourself, you know, it is easy, that first part. But the last 20 miles took me hours. I don't know what my timings was, but I bet when I got to Tyndrum, I was on for a fantastic time, and it just got slower and slower and slower because you was just knackered. And then, the icing on the plate was Lindavra, and you overtake me with a big smile and enjoying it. That was the difference. You enjoy it. I was wrecked and hated every little bit of that 10k.
Well, that was my second one, and you know, I was on for a, in the end I was just under the 20 hours, but it was just an amazing experience because I never ever thought I could be that quick. So I did have a big smile.
Well, not even that, you were enjoying it, which is, you know, I've looked at some of the questions on Facebook, so I can go to that later, but there is some things I've learned, and one of them is enjoying a run. And you were enjoying it, you could see, and that makes it effortless. Well, not effortless at that place, but, you know,
relatively
a lot more effortless than I was having that day. But I remember just before that, I could hardly lift my legs anymore, and I was kicking stones and losing toenails as well, and just a horrendous time, to be honest.
Yeah. So that was a tough time. You finished in 20 hours, 47:35. I've got the times here. So I've written it down. I think for most people, obviously, that's a very good time and a reasonable time. But for your potential, you were obviously disappointed with that. And I remember the next year in 09, we basically did all our training runs together. Do you remember? You know, from January through to the race, we did a monthly training run together. We did the 2-day run together, and that really helped me prepare. And I remember lots of conversations we had, and you were determined to try and get your pace right on that second year, and to make sure that you didn't go off in first place the Rowadennen, and you finished strong. So what happened in 09?
Well, that went even worse. So, first of all, that was the year Karen was born. So I do remember doing some of my runs, and when I look back, I have a terrible memory. I should have brought all my training logs and everything to here with me. I do remember we did a lot of runs together, and they were brilliant, but I did also do, it was my first experience with back-to-backs as well. So sometimes I would do a run the day before, and maybe do 10 or 20 miles before. I would rush them and race them still. But I was determined, and I felt great in those runs we did. The problem, and so I don't know if that didn't really help, that I was maybe, I don't know whether sometimes with Debbie not training, I maybe felt a bit bad or something, that I was training and she wasn't, and I was doing the West Ham way, because I do remember doing some runs up at Ben Glass and just rushing it and just getting back as quick as I could. But I think the worst thing that happened was the week before. Debbie was meant to do, she was going to do the 10K at Bearsden Old Guy 10K, which was, she was going to be the back marker, but she was sick all weekend, so I did it. And I was back marker, and it was about an hour and a half to run a 10K, and it was really slow. I was knackered doing it. I was honestly really knackered. Now, I don't know whether, again, I was overtrained because the back-to-backs maybe didn't suit me, or it was the bug that Debbie had that now I had, because I was sick the Monday and the Tuesday. I was off work and I was really sick, so that was not a good idea to even think about running the race. But you've put, you know, 6 months of training into this, probably more. I probably started training for that in November, and you'd need to lose a limb to be honest, to not do it. And I think most people that start the West Ham Way probably are tired or not completely 100%, but they do it anyway because you've trained so long for it. So I raced it again and was lucky to beat 24 hours. It was probably my most horrific run I've ever done. It truly was. After that race, I could have just thrown my running shoes out and given up, because, like you said, we'd spoken so much. I ran good training runs, then to do the race and to get to Kinlochleven and think, I'm not going to beat 24 hours here. I need to do 30 minute per mile to beat 24 hours, but I couldn't even near enough do that. It took me to Lundavra to get my average pace. I was looking at the Garmin to get it down under 30 minute mile. And you can't even walk that slow if you try, but that's the pace I was going. And I just remember everyone overtaking me. I remember Ian Beattie overtaking me, and Graham overtaking. Everyone was overtaking me. And the worst thing is when you have these training runs where even if you go too fast, everyone, you know, thinks, oh, they're going to do fantastic. And so when they see you, it's like, Marco,
yeah,
why are you here? So it makes you feel even worse.
Yeah.
And Debbie was scared of the dark and was dragging me up the hill, you know, because she was by that time, you could have a pacer, because I was so far behind. And I couldn't keep up where I couldn't get up the hills. I couldn't walk. I couldn't move. And that was the year they took the bloods, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I actually took probably 6 months to go over that race. It's one thing that I've learned. People say you learn more from failure than you do when it goes right. And I learned a lot from that run of what not to do with your body, because they took the bloods at the beginning and they took the bloods at the end, and there's the liver enzyme muscle wastage, and mine was sky high. It was 20,000 or something. Your normal limit's like 100 or something, and a bodybuilder's like 300. And I get my bloods tested in the August or the September after that, because I just still didn't feel well. And that level was still over 8,000. I then went for, we moved house as well, and I couldn't get life insurance because of that. They thought I had a liver disease. And
wow.
So I had to go back again and get it tested. Luckily, when I went to get it tested, I actually have a heart murmur, so I thought it was to do with that when they knocked me back. So I went to the doctors to get that tested, thinking, oh, it's a heart murmur. It says, no, we've got to test this muscle enzyme. I had just done a D33 2 days before, and I'm like, oh no, it's going to be sky high again. But that was a race I'd done properly, and so it was only like, I think 250 or something, so it was actually okay. But that race completely killed me. I completely had to start running from scratch, because your body can only, the way I look at it now, is can only handle so much. And when you go over that, you're just breaking it apart. And in an ultra, you never want to go over that. And so it's made me think I would rather DNF now than finish the West Elm Way. So this year, when I do the West Elm Way, if I get to Glencoe and I'm wasted, I'll never ever just hang on again and do it, because it takes far too long to come back. You're better building year on after each other to try and to become better rather than killing yourself.
Yeah.
And it was something I learned from that run. I learned where your body, everyone's human. It doesn't matter if the person at the beginning or the person at the end, we're all, you know, fallible to, you know, and, you know, to not going right.
Yeah.
And we have to listen to our bodies and say, oh, it's not going right, why continue?
Yeah.
And you know, it's so easy, you know, if you've spent 6 months training for a race, or you've flown 2,000 miles to go to a race, don't kill your body to do it, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, and Lizzie Hawker is one you saw, you know, she's pulled out and she's flown miles this year to get to that race in the 24 hour instant.
I think from my perspective, you know, having ran with you quite a bit over 08 and 09, it was, you know, you say it was fun, it was fun catching you up and getting past you, but it was sad as well, because I knew the potential you had and I still have to run the race really well, and if you can get it right, then it's there. And in 2010, you finished in 18 hours 47,
mm-hmm.
So again, a really good time, but still probably not your potential, but that obviously went better. But you still had struggles, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I think I went to... after the race the year before, I could have never ran again. I found it really difficult. But I did get back into running and started to enjoy it again. But what I did different was I went to Hampden. You'd gone to Hampden before, and I actually got an analysis of how my body works and heart rates and stuff. And I started to train in heart rate. And I found that I was just training every run far too hard. And so, and also around, you know, that year and maybe the year before as well, I started to train with the people, the Glasgow Lunch Runners, and specifically Mark Johnson, who's one of the selectors for the Hill Racing Squad. And he really, you know, told me how to train. Him and, you know, and going to Hampden as well for the heart race, so that kind of worked for the heart race. But Mark Johnson really showed me that, you know, I was running with people that were doing 32-minute 10Ks, but we were going out and doing runs at 7:40s, 7:30s, 7:50s, and I'd never done that. I always went out and did 7-minute miles or 6:50. I just ran to get it over and done with. But we ran, you know, we started running. So, you know, you had your 8-mile easy run at 7:30s, 7:40s, and it was just a bunch of guys chatting, you know. And then you had your speed session, but you didn't go 100% in the speed session. I used to go 100%, and your first rep would be really fast and the last rep would be really slow. But he showed me the importance of keeping it steady. Every rep had to be the same pace and keep to your heart rate, relax, don't strain. Well, I think it's the same, isn't it? And so a mixture of this really, really is what started to prepare me, and is, you know, I'm still building on that now. Mm. You know, how many years? 3 years later, 4 years later. So, but this is where things start to go right more. But I did one thing wrong. I ate too much crap the day before, and I had real toilet issues.
Yeah.
And spent. I remember coming into Balmaha and having to go to the toilet, and thinking, I can't believe that this is going wrong again. You know, I feel brilliant, but I cannot run here because my stomach is killing me, and it was burbling, and I think I spent 10 minutes in that toilet. I know every toilet anyway, somewhere. I went rare den toilet. There's a rock. I still pass this rock just after Ben Glass, and I always look around and see this rock. Don't ever go behind that rock, because that rock is, I remember I was crouched behind that rock to see Thomas fly by me, and I'm going, no, he's beat me. So me and Thomas had a great, that was good fun that year, because that was Thomas's first year. He completed it after two DNFs, and we both spent the whole day. I don't think we actually talked to each other, just going back and forward, catching each other. And he had just as many problems, maybe not toilet ones, but the whole race up to 75 miles, I spent ages. I actually fell asleep in the toilet at the Wigwams, because I was so tired, and I was sitting in the toilet and I was like dozing off, and my support team were knocking on the door, get up! And it was just then that Sharon came by, and I think she'd won it the year before, and Debbie had given me a year of hell because of that. Oh, Debbie, Sharon beat you in the West Island way, and I heard them all cheering because she was first girl there, I think. She was first girl, and I just came out of the toilet and I could have cried. Because I just thought, I can't believe it. You know, I'm having all these problems. Can't run for more than 2 miles without needing a shit. Sorry. And Sharon's beating me now. So I got to Glencoe and I met Silky. Silky was there and she gave me something for my stomach. And I don't know what it was. It might have just been painkillers, to be honest. I don't know. It was either painkillers or something for your stomach.
Some ginger.
It was just something. And so you walk, I kind of jogged around to the, you know, the bit where you go around the road and then you got the, up the hill. And all of a sudden I just felt, I feel all right. And on it, I think me and Thomas both had the fastest times for that last section. I felt as if we'd just done a 20-mile race. I didn't feel any of the 70 miles before that. Now Jelly Baby and Red Bulls helps with that, because that's why I'd gone on to Jelly Baby and Red Bull. And I still think nowadays if I have a real bad time, hey, Red Bull. But I was brilliant. And then I remember, I think I was fifth that year or something, fourth, and me and Thomas ended up having a race the last 2 miles, and I feel really bad to this day, because I was coming down the hill at the Fort William. And, you know, I'd just overtaken Kate Jenkins, and I was quite happy to have overtaken Kate Jenkins, because, you know, she's a fabulous runner, and I was like, oh, this is great. Coming down, I was just taking it nice and easy, and my watch had ran out, and I was still thinking I was going to beat Neil Gibson's time. I was like, oh, is this world can get better than this? And I just turned around and I heard this noise. And it was Thomas. And I went, ah, Thomas. And I don't know whether he never saw me or didn't notice it was me. He just kept running. I was like, oh, so he wants a race then? And I was like, oh. And I think I took 2 minutes out of him in the last hill. But I've never I ran, honestly, the roundabouts at the end, I ran straight across through the traffic. I was just thinking, they better stop. But the worst thing was that when I got into Braveheart car park, I'd said to my support team, Thomas, it's right behind me. Where is he? And he says, he's metres behind you. But they were kidding, to make me run faster. So I thought he was literally metres behind me. And so that whole way, I've never been so knackered along that road to the 30 mile an hour sign, running as fast as I could, which was probably 10 minute mile pace or something, thinking Thomas is just about to overtake me. He's so strong at the end of races. But he was 2 minutes behind. But I still feel guilty this day. I think I should have waited and we should have ran in together, because we've become really good friends since then, and I always think to myself, I should have waited and we should have ran together. But I was quite happy that he got his own time coming in, because everyone knew he'd had so many issues and so many problems. He got his own time coming in himself, so that kind of makes me sleep easy.
Excellent. So that was a good run, and you were 18 hours 47 on that one and 34 seconds. And then 2011 you came back, but sadly that was plighted by injury, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. So again, that year started off with, I'd got sponsorship from Hamden, so I got a free test this time, which is great. So I used that, and because I'd had the year before had been good, and this is what I'd said earlier, you build on every year, I'd gone up a level. So when I went to Hamden to get tested, all my heart rate and everything went up. And so now I had these new training zones where I could go a bit faster and everything. And believe me, I felt fantastic. Really, really good. Mark Johnson had said one thing to me. He said, just be careful. Your cardiovascular system always gets better quicker than your actual ligaments and muscles and things like that. And, you know, I was like, all right, good, that's good information, but I feel great, so it's fine, you know. So, you know, it's the same, you never think twice when things are going right. It's like stretching. When things are going right, you never stretch, but when it's going wrong, you're doing all the stretches you possibly can. So I didn't ignore it, but I didn't take a lot of note of it, and slowly I started to get kind of niggles, just small things, but I think the worst thing I did was I changed my shoes. Now at that time I was wearing orthotics in my shoes, because one of the first races I got terrible shin issues and they all swelled up and went red, and I think Sandra's had the same issue as well, and it ended up that I had to go to hospital with it, and they ended up, they said it was like an infection in between two of the layers of skin, but I don't know if that's true or not. So, but I had orthotics, and I'd went to get shoes fitted, and I always wear neutral shoes with orthotics, but this time I went to the shoe shop and they says, no, you don't need to wear neutral shoes, you can wear ones with slight support. And they looked at me and watched me run on a treadmill, and they said, yeah, these are the best shoes for you. I then went out and did a run in these shoes, and I think I hurt my Achilles. I then went another run the next day and it was completely knackered.
It was the shoes, do you think?
It was a pair. I'd never ever worn Brooks shoes before, and they were really quite tight around the Achilles. Now I don't know whether, I to this day don't think you should wear an orthotic with a supported shoe. It should be a neutral shoe. So I don't think that was the right decision. I shouldn't have listened. I didn't like that, the way they were telling me. I didn't think it was right, but I thought they know what they're doing because they're in a shop. It was the wrong thing, and I should have gone with my gut instinct. I listened to them, and I did that. Now I can't remember what month that was, but I had been going really well, better than the year before. Training was easy, I was relaxed, doing a lot of hill runs and stuff. That happened, and I think immediately I had to pull out the fling. I think I was in the fling that year, so I supported the fling. I then came back again.
Yeah, I remember it was a month before the fling. I remember we had a conversation, and you were saying, you know, the fling's touch and go, and then you didn't do the fling, thinking that that'd be better for West Hallam Way, but you missed about 8 weeks of training.
Actually, I missed a lot of training, and the Achilles just did not seem to. Yeah. I think it's it's one of these, it was another learning experience where if you get an injury, it's, you know, and you see a lot of people on Facebook posting this, I'm injured, oh, I'll take 10 days out and then I'll be fine, and it sometimes feels fine, but sometimes you need to take that. With this injury, the Achilles, I would leave it 2 weeks and then I would run for a week, but you would never run properly, it would never feel proper, and you would go back to exactly what you were doing. You know, so if I was running 5 days a week, two speed sessions, and you know, and then a long run at the weekend, I would go straight back into that because you'd lost 2 weeks already. You couldn't lose another week getting back up. So then a week later, your Achilles would be sore again and it'd be injured. But, you know, there was a lot of people that have Achilles issues constantly and they still run. I remember Richie telling me that year he has Achilles problems. And he was winning the race. So, you know, I thought, well, if I take a time out, you never know. I've paid for it.
Yeah.
You know, let's see what happens. So I actually, you know, started that way some way. Kind of, I didn't know how it would go, to be honest, but for the first half of the race, I probably had my best and easy. It felt quite easy, but apart from the Achilles was sore from the word go, it was, and I got to Drimmen at the same time as Richie. We ran together into Drimmen and I said to him, oh, so is your Achilles still sore? And he just looked at me and went, no, it relaxes, it eases off after a mile. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, my Achilles is killing me. But I got to Crane Larrick, but by the time I got to Crane Larrick, I was getting cramps and, you know, because I was trying to keep off the Achilles and I was getting cramps in one leg and I just, and but whether, I don't know what causes cramps, exactly, no one, you know, really does, but whether that was just because of my so much training, you know, that consistency beforehand, or...
And it was hot that year, wasn't it?
I thought it was quite cloudy.
Was it?
I can't remember. Maybe that was my eyes hazing up. I do remember, it's funny because the Fling's the first time I've been back on. The Fling this year was the first time I've been back on the West Ham Way in a race. I've maybe done a couple of short runs and something. In a race situation, and the same thing happened. Not the same thing with Achilles, sorry. I met Paul Giblin coming out of Rurdenen, and it was in the West Ham Way I'd met him, and it felt like a rerun. But in the West Ham Way, when I had the Achilles issue, Paul, I just, you know, I was running away from him, and then he was behind me again, and I was just, you know, he was just so strong, and I couldn't, and I was just struggling so much. I knew from Connick Hill I'd never finish it, but I kept going. You know, even though I'm saying it was actually easiest, I suppose that's compared to the toilet issues I'd had the time before. But what I'd learned from the year I did 24 hours was, don't wreck your body for this. You know, I could have maybe finished it and had I got 26 hours this time, maybe, or 26, you know, maybe I'd have beaten 24 hours, but I'd never ran again, or I'd have snapped my, yeah, I don't know what, you know, it was sore. I couldn't think of it, but I decided I would never ever do a race like that again. And it doesn't matter how important it is, there's always another race.
And then 2012, you spent most of last year injured, didn't you, really, off and on?
No, I got selected for the...
Of course you did. Oh, that's right, yes. So you did that instead of the West Ham.
I did that instead. So I think I entered the West Ham way, actually.
Yeah.
I entered it.
But they wouldn't let you
get rid of me. No, I was quite... do you know, in a way, I think I was glad to get selected. My support team, I've had the same guys in my support team, Rob and Athol, have been absolute rocks. I've had other people in my support team as well, but they've been fantastic. But Rob did the West Ham Way last, or ran some of the West Ham Way. He had to pull out last year, but he's been going on and on at me to do 50 and 60 mile runs. He says I'll be strongest at that, and I did that last year instead, and probably had my best year. Enjoyed it more. Why am I doing the West Ham Way again this year? Unfinished business. he'd been trying to get me to do more of these, and I think as well Debbie and Thomas and Sharon all got picked for the Celtic Plate, and I didn't, because I was inconsistent. I was having some good runs, terrible runs. I was never had a, and there's no way I'd get picked, but all my friends were getting picked, and so that kind of helped me as well, because I thought, I want that. I want to be picked to run that. I'd never run 100k at Celtic Plate before or anything like it, but I wanted to do it. And so last year, that was my aim. And so I did the canal run, which is a run, the Glasgow Edinburgh, it's a run that I never thought I'd ever do. I actually enjoyed it. It was good. I started to see that you could do these shorter runs, and you don't need to put as much into it. Like, you don't need to put the months of training into it.
Mm.
So what was annoying me was I was spending 6 months training for the West Ham Way, and then 6 months recovering from it, and it was becoming this circle. And you know, around about January time, I would have fantastic fitness where I could probably go off and do some good 10Ks, but I would spoil it by doing 40-50 mile runs and continually trying to get the West Ham Way right, and it just never was going right. I was getting nowhere with it. So it was good to have a different, something different.
Yeah.
And last year showed me that probably 100 mile runs is not my thing, and I am better at 50-60 mile runs.
Mm. Well, we'll maybe come on to that, because yeah, one of the questions on the Facebook was dealing with that. But just tell us a little bit about this year then. You've had a really good year so far, and you had a great run in the 100k, and you're now 5 weeks away. This time in 5 weeks you'll have finished.
Do you think?
Well, no, it's close to Friday. No, it's the, on the Saturday you'll have finished. Well,
this is a Friday, yeah. 5 weeks?
Yeah, 5 weeks tomorrow the race is. So,
I better start training.
I know. So, how was your training going, and how do you feel about the race this year?
This is me testing something new. Now, I've gone against some of my training from before, and it's worked so far. So the years before for the West Ham Way, I knew what I was going to do every single day from January to June. Mm. Every day, I could have told you, 2 weeks on Saturday I'm doing a 40 mile run, and then, you know, the next day I'm going to do 10 miles easy, and this is the pace I'm going to do, this is the heart rate, blah. This year I'd not got anything written down.
Mm.
There's absolutely nothing written down. I know in my head what I need to do, but now I'm trying to listen to my body. So if in my head I know that I need to do, you know, so many runs, long runs for the 100k, I knew I needed to do, you know, back to back 20 mile runs, and then, you know, another, you know, and I'd have to do so many of them. But if I got to that Saturday and I felt a little bit iffy, when I had it written down, I was felt forced to do it.
Mm.
But now I'll say, no, I'm not going to do it this time. I'm going to wait, and I'm going to do it tomorrow, or I'm going to do it next week, or I'm going to do it on the Monday, you know, when I feel better. And so I'm a lot more, it's a lot more relaxed.
Mm.
Also, the difference as well is when I was doing the West Ham Way before, I always had that as my main race. But to be honest with you, I haven't thought about the West Ham Way until after the 24 hour there.
Mm.
I haven't. You know, it's not been a main race as much.
Yeah.
It's a main race for me, but it hasn't been a main focus. So, you know, the way I did it this year was, again, during the winter, I would train for 10K. You know, I would train with the guys, the Glasgow Lunch Runners, and they mostly do 10Ks, half marathons, and they'll be doing marathons towards the spring. So I trained with them right up to the Nationals. So I didn't do anything really that different. So I had good training up to Nationals. I would do hill running at the weekend, just, but it was all be easy. So if I felt, I would go up the hill and I'd say,
yeah,
and I'd go to Matt Wilmington and Thomas as well, and we would just say, well, we feel like doing 10 today, so we would do 10, or let's do 20. And we did slowly build it up, actually, so we didn't just go straight to 20. You know, we couldn't just go, you know, we'd do 15 and then we'd say, oh, let's do 17 today. And it was just all relaxed, and there was nothing, no one saying you had to do.
No.
You just did what you wanted. So if the weather was minging, we just went back around and came off the hill. Oh, we've only done 5 today. Oh, well, And then the thing was, every week I noticed I was getting faster. And, you know, I was even not missing speed sessions, but I had a lot of work on. So, you know, especially November time, I was only doing one speed session a week. And so the other thing I was doing was, I used to go down to London and work, but I would say, oh, the guys are doing 3 times 8 minutes speed session. And I would go and do that along the Thames after getting up at 5 in the morning and working a whole day, living in coffee, and then forcing myself to do this. So I stopped doing that as well. I would go down to London and I would go, I just fancy 3 miles, and I would just run slow as possible, and everyone would overtake you, just relaxed, and then come back again. But the thing was that I don't think I could have possibly done that if I'd started to get slower, but I wasn't. I was getting faster, and I could tell every week because I'm running against the same people doing speed sessions or races, and I was in front of them, and I started to beat people I've never beat before in races. So I had the nationals, I came in 70th. 70th was, to me, I just attempt to get top 100, and I got 70th, which I was over the moon about. And there was the West Districts, in which was down beside Thomas's house, and, you know, I actually was running thinking, I'm not taking this very seriously, I'm not really even running that hard, but I was overtaking people I've never overtaken before. So, you know, things were starting to come into place, and I think also my nutrition is a lot better. I changed a lot of my nutrition, and I weighed 78 kilos and I was down to 71, 72 kilos, so it was a big difference. I was eating more vegetables and a lot more meat as well, which may not be so good for you. But, you know, I was, and things seemed to be clicking, but because we're all clicking, I was a lot more relaxed.
Yeah.
And so beforehand, where I would have felt I've not done the training for something, I was actually confident, and I was taking that into the races. So I was, you know, going to the Celtic Plate and not being nervous about it. You always have to be a little nervous. I think you would be daft to race, but I wasn't getting there shaking, nimble, you know, and not getting a night's sleep. Actually, the day before the 100K, people woke me up because they were outside partying, and I just sat on my phone or my iPad or something and just thought, oh, well, you know, who cares? I'll be fine in the morning, you know. And I did get stressed when you came because I forgot to put my chip on.
Okay.
Apart from that, I did. That was the only bit that was stressed. And it's been really good. I suppose you can, sometimes I feel, you know, I might feel, if someone was trying to copy what I was doing, they might feel they're doing, being lazy or something. But it's not. I'm trying to listen to my body. So some days, if I feel like going fast, that means it's time to go fast.
I remember we had a run in February. You took me up on the Kilpatricks, and one of the things that you said to me struck with me. You were saying that there's, in the past, you've had maybe a 20-week training program, but after 8 weeks, you get pretty fit quite quickly. So you're almost at your peak at 8 weeks,
that's right,
and then you're just trying to hold it for another 12,
which you can't do.
Yeah. Whereas this time, I got the impression that You're not trying to get to a peak quickly. You're just sort of letting it happen naturally.
Yeah, relax.
Yeah,
and it was funny because in January, February, I was my fastest I've been in a year. I think I should have done a 10K because I had a PB'd at it. I was absolutely flying, but I wasn't trying. It was effortless. It just was. Every day I would go out running. I wanted to run, but because there was no pressure, I didn't have this pressure on myself every day saying, you must run this. So I would get up in the morning and I would say, yeah, if I thought, I don't feel like running today, I just wouldn't run. And I suppose I learned some of that from Debbie, who's doing fantastic. She always has a Friday off. And I never had a single day off. I had one day a month off, and that was just due to, because I had to work or something. You know, it was forced upon me. But now I was taking more days off, but what I did notice was I was doing more mileage in a month than I was before when I was forced into it, because I was doing, you know, instead of doing, like we spoke about before, instead of going out and, oh, I've got a 40 mile run for today, I was going out and I was maybe thinking, who will I run with? Because I like to run with people. Oh, they're doing marathon training, I'll run with them today. So I would run 15 miles on a Saturday at marathon pace with these guys, and then I'd think, right, who's running on the Sunday? Oh, Matt's doing a hill run. So I'd go off with him and I'd say to him, by the way, I've done 15 miles at marathon sort of pace today, so I'll be slow. But he'd say, oh, who cares, we'll just go up and enjoy it. And we would just go up, but before long you'd done 30 miles, 35 miles in a weekend, where you would normally have done maybe a longer run of 25 miles and then taking it easy the next, you know. So the mileage never dropped, but I was having a lot more fun doing it.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was just enjoying running.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no pressure. And when I got selected for the Celtic Plate, I didn't think, oh God, I must have a training plan, I must do this. I knew that I had to do back-to-back runs from the year before, and the most I do is a 30 mile run. I didn't even do a 30 mile run, I think I did 27. I ran from Falkirk to Glasgow, so on the canal, and that's about 27 miles. And I actually ran it, I ran it twice, I ran it once there, and I did it at average 8 minute mile. And then a few weeks later, I thought, I'll need to go and do that again. And I looked at the weather forecast and I saw that it was going to be an easterly wind. So I thought, ah, oh, fantastic, I'll start at Falkirk. An average 6:40s because the wind pushed me the entire way. But the confidence that gives you, even though I knew the wind had pushed me, I thought, well, if I can do 27 miles at 6:40s, I can run at 100k at 7s then. So I just, and it was something, another thing I'd learned from Thomas goes out, he said to me, why, you know, this is going against something I'd said earlier, where I said, I'll go out and do, you know, things, you know, you should be relaxed and easy at the beginning, and it should be slow, because then you'll get the dividends. Well, Thomas and Stuart Mills, they say go out fast. Now, Stuart Mills maybe does it far too fast compared to what I would maybe do. But Thomas has had some cracking runs, and he's gone out. You know, we've had a lot of time to discuss, and I said, oh, let's do 7s. And he'll say, well, I did that race, I felt really good at 7s, so I went 6:50s. And wins the race, you know. So I thought, I'm just going to go out how I feel. And I think the 100K, we must have done, I don't know, we definitely never negative split it anyway, because it was far too fast at the beginning. I think it was like the first 30 was at like 6:50s or something. It was ridiculous, you know. And yeah, but we just ran, I'm just running how I feel now.
Yeah.
And then between the 100K and the fling, the 100K actually trashed my legs, really trashed my legs. And all my running had been on a flat and on canals. You know, and then the fling came along and I had done no off-road, so, but I couldn't run. I went out and tried to, I think my first run after the 100K, I managed 0.2 miles. And my second run was even worse, it was 0.1 miles. I couldn't run, things weren't right. There was something wrong with my legs.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really bad. It took me, I think, 2 weeks before I did a proper run. And then all of a sudden it all clicked back in again and I started running. And then the week before the fling, because it was 4 weeks between them, so the week before the fling I thought, I better actually run some of the West Ham way here. So I went out and I did Bamaha to Rurdenen and back. And I had this time in my head that I thought Thomas had told me that he'd done it in this time before he'd done the Devils. And I thought, if I can do this time, then I can have a good, because he went and did that time and then he went and won the Devils, and I thought, if I can do that time, I'll have a good fling, right? So I went out and I did this time, and Thomas is straight on the phone at the end, oh, how did you do? Like, oh, I did it in, how many miles is it from Balmaha to Rurdenen and back?
15. Yeah.
So I did it in 2 hours, I think, or just under 2 hours. So Thomas goes, how did you do? I did it in 2 hours, which is the same as your time. What? I've never done it in 2 hours. It took me 2 hours 30 minutes or something. I've killed myself trying to do it in 2 hours. I'm sure you told me 2 hours. I never told you 2 hours. So I was like, oh, whoops. And I think the next day I did another run the next day or something, and I did a run with Matt, and I says, Matt, I need to go easy, because I just did this 2 hour stupid running up and doing all these hills trying to beat Thomas this time. So I get back to racing Thomas all the time. I wasn't, it was relaxed.
Even when he wasn't there.
Yeah, when he's not there, it's his ghost. But the difference was it wasn't a race, it was more relaxed. But the next day I went out with Matt, and yeah, we went an easy run, which with Matt means 6 stars or something, you know. And then I pulled something in my calf, and I spent the whole of the week before the fling with this really sore calf, and it actually, it was the other leg, it felt like it was pulling the Achilles. When the fling came, I'd done all my 100k training, and then I'd only done a 15 mile run, but I wasn't worried about it because I remember reading a blog, this US guy from the US who would just train in the winter, then he would race, and all the bits in between was just recovery. And so I was quite happy to do that.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, look, with this, I don't know how long we've been talking here, but
I'm
still got
gibbering
on. No, it's really interesting, but I've got a few questions here, so if we can. Let's try and answer some of these. This is from Murdo, and he said, you were a very versatile runner, everything from 10k road races, cross country, 100 kilometres round and round of Perth, 53 miles Howland fling on trail, canal race, etc, etc. What is your favourite of these, and on what do you feel you are best?
I think my favourite, I like 40 to 60 mile races. I like the doubles. I just quite like the canal race. And I actually do like 100Ks. I know they're just round and round, but I like the faster type of ultras. When I first started ultras, I always just thought of them as fast hill walking.
Mm.
But I'm starting to change the thought of that because it's actually not. It's pretty fast running sometimes, yeah. As well, so for that question I would definitely think that 40, the doubles, and the 100Ks,
yeah,
is probably
okay. And what do you consider to have been your finest achievement from your many achievements? What's the one you look back on and think, well, that's the one I'm most proud of at the moment?
I suppose I've got a very short memory. I was really proud of how the 100K went this year. You know, I didn't really think, when I started, I had a couple of times in my head, but I couldn't believe that I actually got that time.
Yeah. What time again from the 100K?
7:21.
7:21.
I actually just wanted to beat 7:30. But I had this kind of, I wanted to give myself a push and thought, well, I might be able to do 7:15. I wish I'd done 3 minutes faster because it was a GB selection for 7:18.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I never got it. They're doing it in South Africa as well.
Oh.
No, there would have been still loads of people in front. But yeah, I think it's an eighth in the all-time list. So I'm really, that's one I'll look back on. But, you know, I'm trying to think of one that maybe I got across the line and I couldn't believe it, you know. Like, even the fling this year as well, I treated the fling as a B race. It was not meant to be, it was meant to scare me into getting ready for the West Island Way.
Mm.
And to get that time when I actually just wanted to get 8 hours. Yeah, I know it's only 15 minutes, but 8 hours was my, like, gold. That was like the 7:15 and the 100K, 8 hours.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if I get a PB and just skate by, but that, I was dead happy at that as well, and even tried to pose for my finish short.
That's right,
you can't see that.
Okay, Amira also says, following on from that, do you see yourself continuing with this variety, or do you think you would specialise more in one particular discipline?
I think the way I do it just now, where I specialise more on the faster stuff in the winter, and the ultras during the spring and summer, I quite like that change. It gives me, when I get to August, September, I actually look forward to, I have a little bit of more of a rest, so every other year it's been due to injury.
Mm.
You know, a couple of a months would be a bit easier. Then November comes and I try to do train a bit more, and then December is the marathon, and I try and run every single day in December, and that kind of, you know, that's also the same time as when I'm trying to do the relay races, and that gets on my speed and gets me fit again pretty quickly. And then January comes, you may be doing an ultra in March or something, that's when you start slowly building your endurance up, and I kind of leave the speed a little bit more as much.
But so you basically like the variety?
I quite like the variety, yes, in short, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Okay, and then some of these on Facebook. Neil Rutherford asks, please ask about fuel known as full-fat D-Fizz Coke. Any particular tip on how to wean yourself onto it? Is it mainly used in latter stages? He's fascinated by it, but I've been putting off experimentation as I've been worried it will turn my stomach and ruin a race.
Mm-hmm. Coke is fantastic for a race, really. I'd only use it in the latter stages of a race, and it has to be defizzed. So normally, a couple of nights before, I leave it open.
Mm.
I don't use it at all in training. I would see that as counterproductive. You want that Coke, that's a special thing just to have. And I know that's probably against what people do because you're meant to get used to your food and stuff like that, but Coke, I've actually found if I have a slightly upset stomach or something wrong, actually settles it a bit. And sometimes, even though you've defizzed it, it still can give you a bit of a good burp. And that sometimes helps as well. So I've never got a dodgy stomach from Coke. I've only ever benefited from Coke. It is rocket fuel.
Yeah.
And it's been well tried by people, cyclists and stuff. But I wouldn't train with it. I try to, especially this year, I've tried to cut the amount of sugars and gels and things that I eat. I try to eat more natural. A lot of cheese.
Okay, Ian Wallace, do you find it easier to run or to support? And between Marco and Debs, who is the better at running and who is the better at supporting?
Well, I could lie here, or I could tell. I wish he tried to get me divorced.
I know, okay. Do you find it easier to run or support? Would you rather, if I gave you a choice, would you rather run the West Highland Way or support Debs?
I would rather run the West Highland Way.
Okay.
I've only supported the West Highland Way once, and I found it really really hard.
Hmm.
It's.
I think when you're running, you've just got one goal to run, haven't you? Whereas when you're supporting, you've got...
Supporting is difficult. You've got to smile all the time. You've got to be happy that you're there in the freezing cold, midge-infested hellhole. I think it's different. There's two different times. If you've got to support someone because you're injured, that is horrible. Because especially if you were meant to do that race.
Yeah.
Now, Thomas was just supported me in the fling, and I'm sure in one way he wanted to be there, but in another way he wished he was running.
Yeah.
Especially when I beat his PB. when I had to support the fling, when I was meant to run it, it was a lovely day, it was all right, but that start line, you just wanted to be there and you wanted to run. When I supported Rob in the West Ham Way this year, it was a really bad day. And believe me, I was so glad not to be running. I ran to Ben Glass from Cranlark, and that was enough. I was frozen, absolutely frozen, and I was so glad not to be running. But it was tough. It's tough to run a bit, get in the car, run a bit. You know, when Debbie did the Grand Union Canal race, that was, it takes me a week to get over that, because one, she wanted me to scout and check out routes and stuff like that. So I would go and park the car, I'd run along a bit, check how it went. Then I would maybe run with Debbie that part. Then I'd get in the car, or I'd run past the car with her, then run back to the car, drive as to the next bit, then run back out. And it's non-stop. There's some races where you get a little bit of a rest, but most races that I've had to do, And because Davey's just getting faster and faster, there's less and less rest. I remember when we first started to support, I could read the paper, feet up. But now I've got to, it's kind of like, it's, and especially now that she's doing the 24-hour races, there's just no rest. There's absolutely no rest. And if it's, if you're not support, because I'm supporting her and Sharon, there's no rest. But then if they're both away around in the same loop, but there's someone else comes in, or someone else needs a hand, or this year I had to take photographs, I had to do the Excel spreadsheets, you know, there was always something to do, so there's never, so yeah, I'd rather run.
Yeah,
run, you get pandered and people look after you.
Okay, I think we've answered enough there that you can get away with.
In a sort of way.
David Etchells, what is the best advice you've ever had that has really helped you, and are you willing to pass it on?
The best advice I've ever had was something that Scott Bradley told me, and he'll not remember ever telling me if he was listening, but he told me that if you're not enjoying a run, you're running too fast. Now, and it's always stuck with me since then, and I think I actually read it as well in a book once, the same quote, but it was Scott Bradley that I've even gone up to him one day and I thanked him and said thank you for telling me that, because a lot of time I'll be running an ultra and I'll be saying I'm not enjoying this, and I just slow down, and it makes a world of difference. It's the best thing I've ever been told for running. And it, the fling this year, I did the same thing. I wasn't enjoying it when I got to Balmaha, so I slowed down, and then, and people all overtook me, but then I just I overtook them later on when I felt better, and it's the best. Everyone should listen to that advice, it's great.
Excellent. Karen Robertson, you've had well-documented tummy issues. What have you done to control this, and have you any good advice for others who have issues?
The worst stomach issues I ever had was in that way, some way, for 70 miles. Don't ever have the shits for 75 miles. What I changed there and what I noticed was the problem was sugar. I found that even in short races, if I had Lucozade before it, it would upset my stomach, or it would make it feel dodgy. It wouldn't maybe give you the runs in a cross-country race or something, but I just didn't. So I thought back to what I'd done in the West Ham Way, and the day before that West Ham Way, I'd sat in front of the TV and carbo-loaded like everyone does, and part of that carbo-loading was yum-yums and cakes and, you know, just everything. So the thing that I've changed is that I don't get stomach issues as much in a training run. And what do you do in the day before a training run? What do I have? Tomorrow I'm doing a 30-mile chain run, and tonight I've had broccoli and chicken, or maybe you'll have pasta or something, but why have anything different? So now I just have exact same. I have the same breakfast that I have in a normal training run day. I'll have the same beforehand, the day before. I don't carbo load. I maybe eat maybe bigger portions, but I don't eat anything different. And I'm pretty picky when we've gone to the 100K and stuff. I'll only eat things I know. I'll not eat loads of pasta, for instance. And I know that's kind of against what people are told, to eat pasta before a run. I don't eat that now, especially this year. I might have eaten it last year, but this year I just try and stick to some meat, maybe a tiny bit of pasta or something, vegetables. Just normal stuff.
So more of a normal diet than,
Don't eat anything different. Why change anything? Right. And then before a race, I'll have porridge and loads of coffee. Try and eat it a couple of hours before and just relax. Don't stress. I think stress, and it was definitely sugars was what I cut. And it was the Lucozade that made me notice.
Yeah.
Taking the Lucozade energy drink. And so this year also I've stopped having energy drink during a race. I just have noon tablets.
In water.
And then Red Bull and Coke.
Yeah.
Which is probably all sugar anyway. Oops.
Okay, there's one from someone called Debbie Martin Consani, and she says, could you fix the washing machine, please? It's been sitting in the middle of the floor for a month.
Well, if she must leave her knickers in the damn thing and plug the thing up, then...
And then Bob Steele says he's having trouble with his washing machine, so could you fix that one as well?
He's always after a young strapping lad to cop to his house.
Okay, Norman McNeil, he says, how important do you view speed training for ultras, and how much do you do?
I think I've had this conversation with you before.
Yeah.
Before I knew. I think speed training is important for any distance. But saying that, you have to be very careful. The reason I don't think you can do, you can't increase your speed training at the same time as increasing your endurance. So you need to have one as a priority, but still do both. I still do both, but I wouldn't go and say, I'm going to do a 40 mile run for the first time. I've only done 30 mile runs. I'm going to do 40, although I don't do 40. I'm going to do 35 the most, right? But if I did, I'm going to do 40 mile run, but then I'm going to really beast these reps. I'll do the reps, but I'll do them at 2/3 effort. And then when it's, you know, when I'm wanting more focus and speed, I'll do them more, maybe at 85% to 90%, but I won't push the endurance part. You need to think how your body's going to react, and you need to think what's best for your body, what your body needs. If you do speed training, really, it makes it feel easier to do the miles that you're doing that are slow, because yeah, you're used to doing a faster speed. If you just go around plodding everywhere, then that's your speed, and so it'll feel hard in an ultra. Also, I think that you can't keep speed for more than 6 weeks, so if you do speed and you peak, you'll only get 6 weeks of that speed before you start to come down. So you have to plan when you're going to do that kind of thing. The amount of time I do 2 speed sessions a week. That might change now because I'm through in Edinburgh. I might do a hill session instead, which is something that Thomas has always said is the best thing. He does a hill session because it's easier in the legs, but it's still a speed session.
Okay, Charles Gordon, what sort of calories per hour do you take in on races given your pace and weight? You said 200 calories plus or minus. Is food a big factor for you?
Last year, so if we thought about last year, I used to take, depending on the race, if it was a slower race, I would tend to go with about 200 to 300 calories. So about 2 gels, maybe a bit more, an hour, that kind of thing. If it was a faster race, I went every 20 minutes, I would have something, so whether it was gel or jelly babies or something like that. This year, I haven't been so rigorous with it. And I've started eating things like cheese and stuff like that. So I know that one bar of cheese, I just need one bar and that's it for an hour. I would definitely say, I definitely think a lot more, when you're doing an ultra run, a lot of the calories is just from your fat stores. You just need to keep a spark there. So you just need a little bit of sugar to keep you going. If I had to say, I would say 200 to 300 calories an hour.
Okay.
On it.
Yeah. Great. Sandra McDougall, what race would you love to do but you haven't yet? And what have you changed since you started ultra running to make yourself the runner you've become? Now, you've answered some of those things, I think, but what race would you particularly like to do that you've not done?
I'd like to do well at the West Highway. This is one you want to do well in. There's so many races, you know. I actually had a discussion with Dave before I left here, and I said, oh, what race would I love to do? There's just so many. I'd love to do the UTMB. Right, that is, you know, I'm scared of the UTMB really, because I remember speaking to Lucy and I said, oh, I want to do the UTMB. And she said, oh, don't do it in a year, you do SLMA, it's so much harder. And it's, and I was over there watching the race and it looked horrendous. I couldn't even run up one hill. I'd love to do that. I'd like to do Badwater. Although Debbie did ask what distance Badwater was and I couldn't answer it, because I'm not really, I don't look
145 miles.
Yeah, that kind of put me off it. I like the idea of, I like warm weather.
You were just saying that you like 40-50 mile races.
Yeah,
you
know, I know.
And then that's 3 times.
A race I'd like to do, do you know what, I'd like to do a 24 hour race. Now that's kind of not the question you asked. I'd like to try a 24 hour race no matter where it was. Because I'd like to see if I could do it, but I need to be able to beat Debbie's distance or I'll never hear the end of it. So I'm working up to make sure that I can do that first before I even attempt it.
Right. Okay. Julie Clark, she says, how did you cope with coming back from injury? And how old will Cairn be when he first outruns both his parents?
Cairn is already running circles around us.
How did you cope with coming back from injury then?
The first time I came back from injury was the hardest. So I had that Achilles issue. And when, to be honest, could have never come back from running. Well, I suppose that's maybe my second injury, because the injury before that with the, you know, not feeling like running was maybe, but both of them were on par with each other. I didn't run for so many weeks, and it was the first time, you know, you didn't run, and all these people you ran with, you just thought, I'll never catch them, and I just didn't want to run anymore. And I remember the physio got me to run, and he had me running one length of a football pitch, and then doing stretching and doing that five times. And I could have ran that, the pace he wanted me to run it at was so slow that I could have ran it in my work clothes and not sweated. And I used to get changed, drive to a park, do this run, and then go back. And I had to do it for like 3 weeks. And it was mind-numbing. I was honestly running. And what I would do is I'd go up to the club so that I could just see my friends and then just run this stupid up and down this football pitch. And I did it. And then one day he just said, you can run in the roads now. And he said, run 2 miles. And I was like, I was so nervous. I thought, oh God. Because the Achilles was still hurt. I was still trying to get it going and stuff. It was tight still. But to be honest, before that, during that time, I thought, I'm never going to run fast again. I'm never going to be able to do what I want to do. And I was actually, at the same time, was also supporting Debbie a lot more. She was starting to really run well. And I thought, I could just support all the time. I was quite happy. And it was really scary because I was happy doing nothing.
Yeah.
And I was happy just watching TV and then supporting Debbie. And but the second time I was injured, when I was injured last year, and it was, it wasn't for as long as a year, but it was just there was some problems with the back of my knee. I was really, really wanting to come back, and I knew I had to take the time out, and I was ready to come back, and I was ready for it. But after the first one, I could have given up running. Yeah. I was ready for crochet knitting. That was a much better idea.
Yeah. Well, we're all glad you've come back. Colin Knox says, how do you and Debs manage work, parenthood, and training? Coin toss to see who runs and who watches the wee fella.
No. Debbie wears the trousers. I just do. No. She gets a choice of a Saturday, and I get a choice of a Sunday.
Not
so if she says, I'm going to do a 50-mile run on a Saturday, then I need to work my run around her. And if I say I'm going to do a 5-mile jog on the Sunday, she has to work around me. And that's how we do it. A lot of time, Debbie, I gotta be fair, she does ask me for what I'm going to be doing, and she sometimes works around that. She sometimes takes a Friday off and runs with Sharon, and they'll do that sort of thing. But we tend to, Saturday's her day and Sunday's mine. Saturday she normally runs the morning, and if I was going to go out, I'd run this in the afternoon. But it also, it involves a lot of people babysitting too on a Saturday morning and things. So if, you know, because sometimes, especially back-to-back running, we both need to run both days.
Mm.
So, you know, it might be that Debbie sets off at 7 in the morning and I set off at 10 or something. But maybe we've got a girl that babysits for us, or my mum, or Debbie's mum maybe looks after Cairn for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
And then by that time Debbie's back, and I maybe run until 2 in the afternoon or something. So
right.
Then I go out for loads of food.
Yeah, excellent. So, but if you could maybe just finish by just telling us what are your goals for the West Highland Way race for this year? What would be for you? You know, I always have a bronze, silver, and gold. Have you got a similar sort of idea of what you'd like to do?
The reason I'm coming back, after saying I like 40 and 50, 60 mile runs, is I just don't think I've ever done the West Highland Way justice for what I want to do. I've never been happy. And I know it's an ultra right race and it's 100 miles and things are going to go wrong, but I've never been, I'm happy with 1847, but I'm not, I think I can do better.
Mm.
I got to beat Neil Gibson's time of 1842.
Yeah.
So, or I'll never hear the end of that. And Thomas's done a lot better nowadays. I don't know what Tom's done, 17. I would really like to get 17 Hours Dead.
Yeah.
And I'm scared saying that now.
Well, if you're getting 17 dead, you might as well get 16, 59, 59,
imagine. That would be, I'd love that.
You want
yeah.
a 16 something,
would,
don't you?
Well, yeah, that was my bronze when I was saying. So I suppose bronze would be definitely beating your PB and
Neil's
beating
time.
Neil's thing.
Yeah.
Silver
is to beat Thomas's time.
Well, I don't know Thomas's time, that may be. Is it just 17, is it 1745 or something?
I think something like that, yeah.
So that's a good silver, I like
yeah,
that.
Yes, that's
yeah.
a good silver, yeah.
Thomas is good at sport, me, so.
I mean,
so
it'll be tripping you up in the end.
He'll be putting laxative in it. No, Thomas, you really wouldn't. Yeah, and then gold would be a 17. But it's hard to think how it's going to go, because every other year I have done 6 months of training, and for this one, I'm trying not to do that, and I'm trying to be relaxed.
But maybe this is the one that, this is what the way you should be doing it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I used to go on Facebook and everyone started training earlier every year. Soon they're going to be training 2 weeks after the last race. And I just don't think you can keep mental or physical focus from November, which is normally when you start seeing the runs going up. And so I think this way of doing other runs before has helped, I think.
Yeah.
I've always felt bad for my support team who've gone through thick and thin, and I just want them to be pleased, proud of it. So.
Yeah, I'm sure they will be. Well, we wish you all the best, and thanks so
much
for coming tonight.
I hope I've answered some questions.
No, I think you have.
I
think there's lots of really good stuff there. I'm sure people really appreciate that. So thank you very much.
No, thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you at the start line. And I'll wave you off as you disappear in the distance.
Just don't be smiling at Linda.
That's right, yeah. Right. No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing how you go this year.
Yes, thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this latest West Highland Way podcast and that interesting interview with Marco, and it'd be interesting to see how he gets on in the race this year and everybody else. Next weekend, as I said earlier, it's my two-day run, Sunday, Monday. On the Sunday, the first day, Ryan McKenzie's running with me, and then on the Sunday it'll be Katrina, so a bit of company on the runs, which will be good. And I thought I'd do something slightly different and try and do a live podcast. Well, not live in the sense of broadcasting as we go along, but I'll take my iPhone along and I think I'll try and do some clips as I go along and talk about the weekend, maybe share some things that I'm learning or I have learned as I go along, and also have a chat with Ryan during the run as well on Saturday. And maybe have a chat with Katrina about support and the way she's been involved over the last years. So I'll see how that goes, but I'll definitely try that next weekend. And then the following weekend, I've lined up an interview with Thomas and Zilka. Thomas has done the race a number of times, but I was really interested to talk to Zilka because I think she had a great race last year, finished in 29 hours or something, and did really well in their preparation. So I thought that would be really interesting to find out from Zilka and Thomas just how she went in her preparation. So there's the next couple of podcasts. That's my plans for those. And then before the race, we also want to catch up with Ian and David as well in their final preparation. Oh, and I also wanted to talk to Caroline before she goes off and does the Western States. So quite a few things to come in the next few weeks from the West Highland Way Race podcasts. But hope you've enjoyed this one, and remember, slow and steady wins the race.